Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. Chucky's on 106.7 The Fan. We are live on NBC Sports Washington as well. The show is brought to you by EMP 180 Weight Loss, the standard for weight loss in the D.C. area. EMP180weightloss.com. Of course, Combine just wrapped up. NFL draft about a month away. NFL free agency. So we figured we'd get into it right now with our next guest, NFL draft analyst for FanRag Sports and NDT Scouting. He's John Ledyard. He joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Of course. John, before we get into particular players, I'm looking at an article you put out about a month ago. The cliches you need to get by during draft season, and one just jumps out at me that I love. Ideal slot receiver. When you hear somebody talk about that, you're basically saying that's a small white receiver. Nothing else about the evaluation matters. If he's short and white, he's a slot.
Yeah, of course.
and the 10 years in the league guy, typically a term reserved only for guards, centers, and terrific run-defending defensive linemen.
Because the white receivers usually have good hands.
Right.
They're not real fast, although they can be.
Yeah.
And they run, good,
exceptions,
they run good routes.
I think these work. These cliches work. They fit.
Right, John? We got that, right?
Hey, you got it. I mean, you heard it this weekend. Mike Mayock on NFL Network, he always gives that piece a nice little bump because he's got quite a few of those that he lets loose during the broadcast. Allows me to kind of plug that piece a little bit, but it was a fun piece.
But
to
can
do.
You?
And it applies to all of us.
But can you blame him though? And we're guilty of it. And I actually get a kick out of it. But can you blame him when it fits, when it's appropriate, and it almost always is?
Right. No, I think that was kind of one of the points of the piece was that we all use these. It wasn't necessarily to snub the nose of people.
Not a bad thing. It is what it is.
Exactly. It's just, you know, the reality of it is that we use those phrases and they describe a lot of what we need to describe, but better than anything else. So, you know, why not use them? But it is sometimes fun to have fun with them and look
right
behind the veiled language kind of that's used there.
Now, another one you have on the list has a different meaning for some of the people in this room sometimes is the dancing bear. Usually in reference, now in football terms.
If you're laughing when we say dancing bear, you're outing yourself.
Usually in reference to an offensive or defensive lineman who is light on their feet despite being quite hefty. Dancing bear. We've seen it in
formats.
So, yes. So who are some of the dancing bears from this combine, from what you saw?
Well, definitely not Orlando Brown because I don't think he can dance, but he's a bear for sure. If you look across the rest of the offensive linemen and try and see, you know, you want to find those big guys who also move pretty well. And I think Tyrell Crosby from Oregon is one of those guys maybe. I mean, he tested really well for a bigger offensive tackle that's known for kind of a hulking style of play, like a finishing type of offensive lineman. You know, I think when you watch Crosby on tape, you see he does have pretty light feet. And those testing numbers won't blow anybody away, but when you consider, you know, almost 6'5", 310 pounds is a big offensive tackle, and he even trimmed down some, I believe. He was closer to 330, I think, in season for Oregon. And he heard some critiques about his frame, so he's gone to work and trimmed down some. And I think that now he's put himself in position to be considered one of the top tackles off the board, and it's kind of happened really quietly. But I think he's a guy to watch moving forward. And then obviously, you know, Mike McGlinchey, too, a bigger offensive tackle who is good enough on his feet. And in this class, there's a lot of offensive tackles. I don't know if there's many elite-end offensive tackles, you know, guys that project to be, you know, 10- to 12-year Pro Bowl-type players on the left side or something like that that teams typically target in the top 10. McGlinchey might emerge as the best of the bunch. He isn't without his issues, but, man, the guy, when he's at the podium and he's being interviewed, he's like a coach. I mean, it's unbelievable to listen to this guy talk. So teams are really going to like how he can come in and step into the locker room and transform the unit and take charge and be a leader right away. There's going to be a lot of intangibles they really like about him. But both of those guys, I think, helped themselves while a couple of other offensive linemen hurt themselves, and really in this tackle group because everybody's so close together for most people. that's one of the big things, is just keeping your draft stock right where it is and letting everybody else kind of, you know, some of the other guys fall off the map.
All right, is this true or not? One of the producers or one of the hosts told me, I can't remember, that you know, Saquon Barkley blew everybody away at the combine. I mean, just everybody had glowing reports of him, and he blew away every test. But you may not be as high on him as everybody else. Is that true?
Yeah, that is true. And everybody kind of expected Saquon Barkley to dominate the combine. You know, whether you regardless of your feelings about Saquon Barkley, this guy's clearly a freakish level athlete, and as a receiver and as a guy in space with the ball in his hands, I mean, he does some unbelievable things on tape. So you consider that right away, and you consider this is going to be a guy that in the hands of the right offensive coordinator is going to be a splash play contributor at the next level. There's no question there. I think the question you get to is Saquon Barkley is when you get to his tape and you see his decision-making as a runner between the tackles, and it showed up time and time again this season. It's one of the reasons why against Ohio State he struggled as much as he did. He just didn't show the decisiveness between the tackles that you want to see. If you're taking a running back in the top 10, you need a guy that's going to be able to run through contact, that's going to hit the crease on time, that's not going to stop his feet in the backfield every time there's a little bit of congestion in front of him. To me, too often, that is Barkley on tape. And if you watch the Iowa game, the game that everybody kind of points to from this season, almost all of his production in that game came from bouncing the ball outside and just out-athleting Iowa's defense. And they just didn't have anybody who could match his speed. Even when they set the edge, he just got out around those guys. That style typically doesn't translate as easily to the NFL. Now, he is a freak. He's going to make some things happen because of that. He's got to learn to play more disciplined. Stylistically, I think he's pretty similar to Reggie Bush when Reggie Bush was coming out of USC, a guy who relied on a lot of splash plays, his speed and his athleticism to get outside to the boundary, was a great receiver. There's a lot of similarities between the two of them. The big difference is that Barkley's 30 pounds heavier, 33 mm-hmm. pounds heavier, mm-hmm. and it has the size to translate to more of an inside running role if he can become more disciplined. But he looks for gaping holes on the inside, and in the NFL, that just isn't often the case for runners, you know, that there is that kind of space inside. So I think that's one of the things that he'll have to adjust to in the NFL. This is still a top 12 guy on my board. I mean, this is still a first-round great player, no question there. But I think if you're taking a running back in the top 10, you need a guy you can trust when he has the ball in his hands to be able to execute every situation nearly flawlessly. And I thought too often on tape, Barkley failed to do that as an inside runner.
That being said, if you were a GM, is there a running back you would take ahead of Barkley?
There actually is. I think he passed Sony Michel, and maybe they're tied on my board now because of the athletic testing, the way that I do the numerical evaluations. But Darius Geis is going to be ahead of him on my board, the LSU running back. You know, again, quietly, Geis tested great this week. You know, he's a power back. Some people have kind of billed him as that anyway. But that doesn't mean he isn't an athlete. And he has some unbelievable runs, especially when he was healthy in 2016. He wasn't even that healthy this past year. His offensive line was horrendous. If you watch Geis this year, he consistently kept the offense on script. He made people miss. The first man never brings him down. He prides himself on that. He plays with an intensity and a passion and a physicality between the tackles that Barkley lacks, I think. He isn't the receiving athlete or the player in space that Barkley is, but he still more than checks the box in that area. And I think he's going, you know, LSU doesn't throw to the running backs, we know that. But when they did throw to him a couple times, he constantly made the first guy miss and maximized the catch. And I think that's what you look for running backs on tape. He looked really good catching the ball in the combine drills as well. He's not a guy that's going to wow people like Barkley is with the testing and stuff, but his frame is extremely well-built. He's layered on muscle, but he's also incredibly athletic and elusive. His ability to get north, put his foot in the ground, and get past the first level of defense is terrific. He's got the best run instincts in the class. I think he's going to be an absolute stud in the NFL, one of the best running backs in the league. And he'll be one of the top players on my board.
Joined by John Ledyard, NFL draft analyst for FanRag Sports and NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter, at Ledyard NFL Draft, for all the information. The Redskins have an early second-round pick. Is there a possibility that a guy like Geis slips to that spot, or Sony Michel out of Georgia is there? So they're not going to have to spend that high capital, the 13th pick, on a running back. Is one of those guys or somebody similar to them going to be there in the second or third round for the Redskins, in your estimation?
I think that it's possible that Geis is there in the second round. It's possible Michel is there in the second round. I would love to see Geis with Washington. That's been kind of a fit that I've pegged. I don't know whether it'll happen at 13, but It would be pretty awesome if it did. I mean, you look at their situation with Alex Smith coming in at quarterback, and you know the receiving talent that they have is solid, but they're looking to add to that group as well. And getting a guy like Geist, who you know can carry the load, who did carry the load at LSU, even behind a bad offensive line against stacked boxes constantly with a quarterback who couldn't throw worth a lick. This is the kind of resume they're looking for in a running back. In the diverse schemes that the Redskins run as well, some zone, some gap man, you know, they do a lot of different things in the run game. And Geist has the skill set and ran behind a lot of those same schemes at LSU. So the fit makes a ton of sense. The style of play makes a ton of sense. You know, you think of Samaje Perine, who they drafted a year ago. Geist is like the rich man's version of Perine in terms of the same similar battering ram type of play that they were looking for, but much more elusive, much better in space, much more explosive athlete. So I think he makes a ton of sense to Washington. It's just a matter of whether they're willing to pull the trigger before he comes off the board.
Hey, if Cleveland takes Barkley one overall, all right, that leaves the Giants at two. Now, the Giants don't need a quarterback this year because they're going to roll with Eli for at least this year, maybe a couple. But let's just say Barkley goes one. Do you think there will be a flurry of teams that will try to move up to that two spot because they really want a certain quarterback? Or do you think they sit back and say, oh, it's fine. You know, there's three or four choices there. I'll just take, you know, whoever's available, whether it's Rosen or Allen or Mayfield or Darnold. So, or do you think that most GMs really want one quarterback if they want any of them?
I think, yes, probably, if I had to guess. I mean, it's probably going to vary a little bit team to team, but if I had to guess, I would say most teams want their guy at the position. They want the guy they've identified throughout the pre-draft process as the best guy for their system, the best guy for their team, the best guy for their culture, to be the leader and face of their franchise. And it'll be, once you go through this long of a process and you attach yourself kind of to hoping for one guy, and he's clearly the top one on your board, it's hard to settle for the next best thing. So, you know, even if Barkley doesn't go on the board and there's a team who's, you know, the Browns take a quarterback and there's a team, you know, that still has their top quarterback on the board when the Giants pick, you know, I definitely think there'll be a ton of teams trying to get to the Giants spot. It's just kind of a matter of where the Giants see themselves. You know, this is an organization that doesn't plan and doesn't think they'll be drafting in the top five or top 10, you know, again, anytime soon. So you've got to take advantage of the opportunity that you have in front of you to address the quarterback position. Eli Manning has fallen off more and more each of the last 4 years. The Giants haven't made the playoffs this past year, obviously, and they're kind of been trending in the wrong direction. I think they only made the playoffs one of those years. And so they need to be able to look at this offense, look at their team under a new regime now and say, we've got to go get the guy for the future. And maybe that opens up the door to be able to trade Eli Manning while he still has some value, because the way he's trending, that won't last very long, especially at his age. His value is depreciating as well. So they have a chance to be able to get something for him, potentially a high-end pick or another player from a desperate team that needs a quarterback in order to win the Super Bowl or in order to compete for a Super Bowl. We know there's several of those in the back end of the first round. They have the opportunity to be able to do that if they identify a quarterback that they really like. I think this quarterback class is very good. I think if Josh Rosen's on the board, he's the top quarterback in this class. And I think the Giants should absolutely pull the trigger and move forward to address the future, because Rosen's ready to play now. And you have a bunch of skill players who are ready to play now as well. So to me, that's what I do if I'm the Giants. But if they don't, yeah, a bunch of teams will try to get up to number two.
Can you talk about the top receivers that are out there? The Skins are certainly going to be looking in that area. And one guy that we're keeping an eye on, obviously, is Maryland wide receiver DJ Moore. His stock seems to just be jumping big time.
There really isn't, in my opinion, a top 15 type wide receiver in this class. It's very much a bunch of twos and threes, kind of. I think guys like Cortland Sutton and Calvin Ridley and maybe even DJ Moore have the opportunity to be number ones for their team, but I don't know that they'll ever be the guys that just kind of do it all. Like, you think of the elite receivers in the league that an offense can run through and lean on in all situations. I don't know that they're that level of guys. So I think that they're very good players. I think they can definitely contributors, and really that's what Washington will be looking for. You know, I think DJ Moore is, when I watched him on tape, I thought this is a guy who's tough after the catch, who generally had pretty good hands, didn't make a lot of plays outside of his frame, didn't really, he attempted to play big at the catch point. He came up inconsistently in 50-50 situations. But I think that he has the tools and the athleticism to be even a better route runner than he showed at Maryland. They force fed him a lot of touches, and he made things happen after the catch. I like his skill set for sure. He tested better, I thought, than what he showed on tape. Maybe there's untapped potential there, you know, for him. Maryland didn't exactly always maximize their players and their quarterback situation. You know, definitely hurt some of Moore's production this season.
I mean, think about it. Yeah,
a good player.
He had terrible quarterbacking, right? Because eyes kept getting hurt. He had 80 catches,
right,
over 1,000 yards, 8 touchdowns, and then his testing was through the roof. He ran faster than Diggs.
Right. Yeah, I mean, his testing was – he was probably one of the biggest five winners of any position group from this past week, especially because the wide receiver position is such a glut of talent right now. We don't have anybody who's really pulled away and established themselves. So I absolutely think he has a chance to be the first wide receiver off the board. 13 still seems a little bit high to me, but he did come in bigger than expected too, and that's going to be big with
teams. What did he measure at?
He was in at 6'2", 210, so the size is great there. I mean, I didn't think he would hit 6 foot. I don't think anyone thought he would hit 6 foot. So he came in big enough for teams, and I think he does have a chance to be the first wideout off the board.
John, real quick, at quarterback, would you rather have Josh Allen or Darnold?
Sam Darnold for sure. Josh Rosen and Baker Mayfield are my first two quarterbacks, but I have Darnold third. I think that he still needs some development, but to me, Josh Allen's the guy who's further away than people want to admit from where he needs to be. I do think that he's improving this offseason from the opportunities I've had to see him throw in Mobile and at the Combine. There were still a lot of ups and downs, but he's definitely moving in the right direction. I would still like Josh Allen as a developmental guy, but to me, he's the fifth best quarterback in this class. I think we use arm strength as a primary trait when it should be a secondary trait, and we forget accuracy, mental processing, and football IQ just in general for a quarterback. Decision-making and things like that, those are the most important things at the position, and those are the areas which he struggles the most.
That's John Ledyard, NFL Draft Analyst for FanRag Sports and NDT Scouting. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Ledyard NFL Draft. Thanks a lot for the time. We'll have to talk to you again soon.
Hey, no problem, guys. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
You hear that? Appreciate DJ it. Could be the first receiver off the board there, JB.
We'll see.
Do we have the clip of Jason where he said maybe he wasn't even a top three at Penn State? Let me hear.
You know how many guys on the off list? About 100.
Yeah, zero Penn State
ones.
I
happen to agree with you. I happen to agree with Valdez on that one. I think Jason was completely disrespectful what DJ Moore's done, and I think he'd be better than a third receiver on Penn State. But
let me just say this. DJ Moore would just be another guy at Penn State.
Maybe he'd be the number one receiver.
DJ Moore wouldn't be a standout at Penn State. And if you flip-flop the Penn State receivers, they would put up the same numbers if you throw to them 120 times.
Maybe. I happen to agree with you, Valdez. I think he'd be better than the third receiver on Penn State. That was kind of the statement yesterday.
That's what I said.
Yeah, I think he'd be better than that.
I just said that DJ Moore, if you put the best receiver at Penn State in Maryland's offense and you threw to him 120 times, he's going to put up the same numbers. All right, maybe I'm wrong. He would be better than number three. But
could be number one in the whole draft.
I will say this. If you put DJ Moore at Penn State this past year, there were so many weapons, he's not going to put up the same numbers because he's not going to have the targets. That was my whole point that you guys couldn't understand.
But head-to-head,
no,
head, it's
him. It's just like it's kind of an average run-of-the-mill receiver that would just be average
head-to-head
at Penn State.
No, I didn't
that's
say
essentially.
That, you know, what do you mean, essentially?
Like, well, you said he wouldn't be the top three.
Okay,
it's
I said I was probably wrong on that.
He's better.
Yeah.
That's
the
point. It's possible. But I think what we were arguing about was the numbers that he was putting up.
And no, I just said was if, you put, he was
if, you put, if you put him in an offense, if he was at Oklahoma State, he obviously wouldn't have put up the same numbers because he wouldn't have been targeted 120 times. That was my point.
You pretty much.
I
didn't say.
I think your point was is that he was just.
You're
a guy.
Putting words in my mouth.
Yeah. Well, that's what I gathered
and the other thing
from
is,
the conversation.
And the other thing is, Valdez never watched Penn State.
Right.
So he doesn't know how good those guys are.
Right. Well, we just watched Maryland.
Right.
Right.
So you guys don't
you're
know.
Telling that? Me I never watched a Penn State game?
Oh, what'd you win? One, maybe two.
I know you watch a Penn State.
Are you watching every single Maryland game?
Penn State and Maryland is probably what he watched. What was that?
Are you watching every single Maryland game?
No. I won't lie and say that. But I watched a few of them.
All right. Well, I watched a few Penn State games.
Right. And you weren't impressed by the receivers?
Well, I think the ultimate impression we're going to see
other than
in
Barkley.
April. But we're going to see in April when he's one of the top three receivers probably in the draft.
It's going to be an argument.
I get my Maryland pride gets in there.
Now, it's going to be an argument for years.
For
he's
years.
Put up numbers.
He better back it up.
Coming right back.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. Chunky's on 106.7 The Fan. Right now, we're going to hook up the 10th caller at 800-636-1067 with a pair of tickets to go see Jim Belushi. Live March 7th. That's tomorrow at the Hamilton.
It is.
Tickets on sale now through the Hamilton box office, but you can win your way in. Right now on the Junkies. Get more details at thefandc.com/contest. It's courtesy of the Hamilton. Again, it's 800-636-1067, and the 10th caller will win those tickets. Of course, Frances McDormand won an Academy Award on Sunday. None of us saw that.
No. I saw the movie she was in, but I did not.
The early part of the Oscars. We did talk about it. We heard reports. Ratings were down 16% from last year. I thought Jimmy Kimmel was fine at best, pretty unspectacular, and not as many people watched it. But after the Oscars, apparently, this guy stole her Oscar.
Right.
And he's such an idiot.
Terry Bryant.
He swiped it off her table
Calvin's
during
brother.
The governor's ball. Terry Bryant, who's 47, was arrested and charged with grand theft shortly after posting a Facebook video of himself drinking and gallivanting around with the giant gold statue.
Don't people know there are cameras everywhere? You can't get away with stealing anything.
Well, he did it himself. He was posting it on Facebook.
Yeah, but I'm not
sure that's
how he got caught. He got caught, I think, because a photographer noticed that he was walking around with it.
And they're like, who's that guy?
I'm pretty sure.
Right, what did he win?
And went up to him and said, hey, this is not yours.
Bryant says in the video.
But you're right, he did post it like an idiot.
He says in the video.
He wanted attention dollars.
My team got this tonight. This is mine. We got it tonight, baby. Who wants to tell me congratulations? While people swarm in to touch the stolen award, which Bryant repeatedly says he got for music, he can be heard asking people where the parties are happening.
Yeah, he was telling people he was a producer. And that's how he won it. One girl says you can go anywhere the rest of your life with that thing.
She thought
he won it.
I just found it funny that he was, I guess, stopped by Wolfgang Puck's photographer. Wolfgang Puck has his own photographer?
Right. Wolfgang Puck's photographer is who caught him.
I mean, I know Wolfgang Puck's a famous guy, but I mean, he ranks famous enough to have his own photographer following him around. I guess. Must be nice.
Gary Oldman's the one that found him.
Found the guy with the
Oscar. He grabbed him and goes, what are you doing?
Right.
And goes, come with me. And pulled him.
Now, did he do it in his Winston Churchill voice or regular Gary Oldman voice?
Regular Gary
Oldman. Or did he do it in Russian terrorist on Air Force One voice? He should have gotten an Oscar for that role.
I thought he just said it was Wolfgang Puck's photographer who caught him.
Well, there's video of Gary Oldman grabbing the guy and going, come with me.
Maybe there were multiple people that accosted him.
There
were
a couple
know.
People there.
Yeah. What an idiot. What do you get for grand theft?
I don't know, man.
What would you get for grand theft? Well, he should go to stupidity jail first, and then go to real jail for the grand theft.
Remember how allegedly we might used to take things back at the old station?
Yeah, it's all like alleged. You can't prove anything.
You know, chairs or, you know.
I never took a chair.
Well, I mean,
I'm not going to point any fingers.
I would never do that.
I don't know.
Would never take a chair.
Don't you have a soap dispenser at your house?
Who wants
you
a chair?
You admitted that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, well, he does that from like country clubs.
Yeah, from Woodmont.
Yeah,
I'll never be invited back there again.
Well, I mean, you've said it on the air.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. Does it say like silly?
Yeah, it's got the great logo.
Yeah.
Now, wait a second.
You couldn't live without it.
What does it look like?
It's a big dispenser, about this big.
It's just one of those regular boxes.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's just refillable. So
yes,
you just go buy like soft soap from Harris Teeter and dump it in the Woodmont holder.
Yeah, but when I took it, it wasn't empty.
Oh, I know. It probably had a lot of product in it.
But that logo is so nice. It's in my bathroom. I'll take a picture of it and send it to you.
Hey, you can live in Ashburn.
But I would never take a chair. I mean,
no.
Never do that.
You take the boy out of PG County. You can't take PG County.
I'll never take a chair and put it in my office.
If you walk out here, this building, I mean, there's those little cameras everywhere.
Yeah, well, that's 2018. Back in like early 2000s, that wasn't the case.
Yeah, right. You could do anything. I tell my
I tell my kids, all kidding aside, you can't get away with anything.
Of course.
I mean, you think you're going to get away. You can get away with nothing. Cameras everywhere. You think you want to pull some hijinks that Cakes used to do at 7-Eleven? You can't do that. None of that can
My good name is getting sullied.
Yeah.
It wasn't 7-Eleven. It was Royal Farms.
That was your go-to?
Yeah. Because that was a Baltimore institution, Royal Farms.
Right, right.
The fried chicken was so good.
All right, let me get started here on the EP here a little bit. Try to get into this a little bit. And you know what? None of us watch it, but I am always sort of fascinated by it. Cakes is a devoted viewer, and it is one of the big stories. Apparently, there was a big blindside in The Bachelor last night. Can you explain, Cakes?
I can explain to the best of my abilities because I didn't watch it. I had to catch up on the interwebs.
Okay.
So Ari, by the way, do you watch it then today? Since you are
no, because I know what happened. I don't need to waste more of my life watching right. it now that I know what the results are.
So Ari Leyendijk Jr., his pops is a silly Indy driver. I think he won the Indy 500 twice.
Mm-hmm.
He's won nothing. He's just has a famous name.
Is it just coattailing?
I think. I mean, he was a driver, but right. you have a famous dad. You're never going to reach his level.
It's tough. Yeah.
Especially so he's down to the final two. So of course they do the drama where they bring the first woman there and she's spilling her guts to him, telling her how much she loves him, and he's just looking down at the tops of his shoes, almost crying because he knows he's going to send her home. I can't remember her name. She's blonde. She's silly. So he says, "Look, I wanted it to work out, but it's just not. So
not in love with you as much.
Not
as the
in
other
love
chick.
With you. I wish it had worked. Blah blah blah." Can I walk you out? So they're holding hands for whatever reason, walking her to
they
the,
always do the classy
to the
walkout.
Ford Expedition or whatever it is. So he deposits her in the car. She rolls off. And then the next woman comes in. He gets down on a bended knee, I guess, proposes. Everybody's happy. Everybody's having a great time. And then I guess within 5 or 10 minutes, he has a change of heart and realizes, I'd let the blonde silly get away, kind of have the feels for her. So he breaks up with a girl that he just proposed to like 15
How
minutes ago.
How did he break
ago.
Up with her?
It's I didn't
insane.
See that. I
did
didn't
he have
see
to go back
part.
To her room?
No, I think it was
did
just
they, right there.
Cameras were rolling, the whole thing.
You're telling me that's not a bit?
I don't think it was a pre-planned bit. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. It's stupid
just
reality
to get the
TV.
Viewers and get the attention.
I don't think it was a bit. I just think he got cold feet. Didn't realize what he had done.
He realized he botched it at the moment of truth.
He botched it. He was in love. He was telling both the girls he's in love with them.
No, I get it. He doesn't know these women very well.
They go on like 10 dates.
Right. They've known each other for a couple months.
Probably like 5.
I need to stop watching this show. It's not doing me any good.
I watched the one with the, maybe it was the Bachelorette.
Yeah.
That had the first African-American woman.
I believe that's Rachel.
I watched that. That was probably like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, I can't keep up with how many bachelors
and
bachelorettes
are there. For some reason, I fell into that one.
Yeah, but Ari's a big, boring dope, and apparently he proposed to a chick, broke up with her, and now everybody on the planet hates Ari. They hate him. They think he's a despicable
person.
There's
no reason to watch that when you can DVR quality shows. Like I said, I watched Homeland last night, which is fantastic. Jason
that
telling
was a
good me. One. Our listener Shola recommended the show McMafia, which is on late. You can't watch it necessarily live. It's on, I think, at 10 on AMC.
It's good.
Give me the 15 seconds plot synopsis on McMafia.
He's a hedge fund manager whose uncle gets killed by the Russian mob.
Okay.
And it's all about trying to avenge the uncle's murder.
Okay. Sounds promising.
The uncle's a little bit shady, though.
Okay.
But now he's working with another guy to try and get back at the Russian mobster.
If you donks like Homeland,
it's good, I'm telling you.
You should subscribe to Hulu. It costs you $7 or $8 a month and watch The Looming Tower with Jeff Daniels. It's very good. I highly recommend
it. I've heard you've talked about that, and I've heard a few other people talk about
it. If you're
it.
In the
give
Homeland.
Give us the plot synopsis.
Yeah, it's all of the intelligence failures and butting of the heads of the CIA and FBI leading up to 9/11.
That'd be right up my alley.
It's amazing. It's really good. It's really well done.
Problem is, you got to pay $7, $8 for Hulu.
I mean, $8. I mean, you pay more than that for lunch.
It's
unless you have Silly Kava gift cards.
It adds up when you have a million things you're paying for. You're paying for Netflix. You're paying for Fios.
I already paid for Netflix.
It's $8. It's $8.
That's $8 I don't have to spend.
All right.
When I can watch Mafia for free.
Okay.
When we come back, I'm going to continue. Of course, we have the Razzie winners. I have some good scoop.
Hopefully, I haven't seen a lot of those movies on the Razzie list.
I'm sure you haven't.
I probably have.
I have some good scoop on the Jennifer Aniston, Justin Theroux breakup.
I'd like to hear this.
And there's a radio guy that we know that's involved in like a $5,000 payola lawsuit thing that is actually hilarious. This guy gets in trouble all the time. It's not surprising.
Really?
Yeah, so for all of you radiophiles out there, you'll get a kick out of that too. Don't go anywhere.
Just a quick reminder, tomorrow night, the Cakes Classic Bounty Tournament, second rendition, goes down at MGM National Harbor. $300 buy-in, starts at 7 p.m.
Tomorrow?
Tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night.
7 p.m., Poker Room, National Harbor. Hope to see you there if you knock me out of the tournament. $300 goes right back to you. Knock anybody else out. You can scoop a $50 bounty. So that's tomorrow night, MGM National Harbor. Hope to see you there.
I don't know why this popped into my head. The Cakes Classic made me think of our battle, the Clash at Blue Mash.
Yes.
Probably closing on the 20-year anniversary.
I mean, it's a long time.
Of the Clash at Blue Mash.
Long time in the rear view.
The last time I went there, the lake wasn't as deep, EB, at Blue Mash. I swam across that lake.
Well, it just depends on the water.
Yeah, I mean, you went during
the
drought.
Yeah, whatever the water is, and it rises and lowers depending upon... You know that
I would play better now than I did back then 20 years ago, but it would still be ugly cold.
Sure, of course it would.
Well, that's just your lot in life. I'm starting to get fired up though because you know I listen to Hank Haney a lot.
Yeah,
you know what his number one tip for amateurs is?
I don't.
Valdez, this is a quiz
for
practice.
Go to the range.
Yeah, put your bag back on your head, pink eyed. If you're watching on NBC Sports Washington,
it's my guess.
Valdez has a paper bag over his
head. By the way, my latest
suspect he has pink eye.
My latest diagnosis, because I haven't seen any crusties develop under the left eye, and that's usually a dead ringer giveaway for pink eye. I'm just going to go with random eye infection, and not quite pink eye.
Why?
Yeah, there's a
just because of the crusty.
Just because there's no like.
Yeah, with pink eye, usually the eye closes up and
it gets all really swollen. Gnarly though.
It's really red.
It looks bad.
Yeah. It's like something's inside of it.
Yeah.
And the last thing I want to do.
Did you get Old Bay in your
eyeball?
No,
I did not.
Are you sure?
Because that would do it.
But this is what I don't want to do. Is I don't want to go to a doctor and then have a doctor send me to an optometrist
you don't
and vice
have to do
versa.
That. Just go to a dumb clinic thingy, 24-hour place near your crib. I got one in Kensington. I go in and out in 20 minutes.
I understand that, but what I don't want them to
do is... Just tell me what you think
clinic.
It is.
Go straight to the eye doctor.
A lot of times you can't.
No, you can. You call our insurance company, and you say, this is what I have, and they will send you. You don't have to go through the middleman and go to the general practitioner.
My eyes are going crazy.
Yeah, and you go straight to
that. But he probably
doesn't
even need that. He probably just goes to the Minute Clinic, and they're going to give him some eye drops.
But if he wants to, you go there. You go straight to the specialist.
And I want you to
go. And make sure you go to one that's covered, because our company doesn't cover all specialists.
Valdez, you won't go to the doctor with the Lido pizza bag on your head. That would be a great bit. And have AWOD film it. We need to. That might be a good bit. Just looking for some quality page views there,
you won't
AWOD.
Valdez, you won't do it.
No, I won't.
Okay.
Maybe an eye patch.
Only sells out when the cameras are in here from NBC Sports Washington.
If any other companies want to give me a bag to wear on NBC Sports Washington, I'm up for it.
It's called a branding opportunity. Why would you turn that down? I don't think you should.
All right, hold on. Number one tip from Hank Haney.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What?
I've already forgotten. Ready?
Yeah.
100 swings a day. It's that simple.
So just the reps.
It's just and it's not even hitting balls. It's just in your backyard.
Keeping it
100 swings a day because it's all about reliability and consistency. And then you can work with whatever you're doing. You can kind of tweak.
Yeah, that's Hank's big thing.
100 swings a day is his number one tip.
And everyone says it's butt tiring too.
I've done it before, but it is actually butt tiring. It takes you probably about 15 minutes, and it is kind of exhausting.
That would be just short of my typical round.
That's 100 swings. No fun.
It's not really fun.
It's like a normal day on the course.
But it's a great tip for someone that's just an app, like people at work.
So
and you can't go to the range every day.
So does that include going to the range? So
sure,
if you,
but
if you
he's not saying that.
Range,
he's just saying
just go in your,
just
front
go
yard
in your backyard
swing.
Or your front yard and just swing 100 swings a day. And like especially like if you're say like, you know, because most of us are 15 to 20 handicappers, whatever. We are average, very average golfers. You just, you know, you're going on a golf trip in 2 weeks. 100 swings a day before you leading up to it to kind of build up the muscles and, you know.
Yeah, but what if your swing is dirty? Then you're doing 100 dirty swings a day.
Well, hopefully you have a level of competence that, you know, you're at least getting it airborne and you're getting it, moving it forward. And, you know, you can work with it. You should be able to tweak it a little bit.
The year after I lost that clash at Blue Mash, which was 20 years ago or 18 years ago, whenever we did that, I then, on the down low, if you remember, took lessons over at Fair Oaks Golf Park. And I would go there when we were a nighttime show before the show, and then I waxed cakes at the War at Westfields. But they had a sign when you got there, and it said 90% of the game is 100 yards and in. And they had a little par 3 course to kind of reinforce that, because everybody thinks about driving, you go to driving range, get out the big clubs. But not, according to that sign, 90% of the game, 100 yards and in. So you work on your putting, your short game, and that's where you're really going to get better.
Of course.
Yeah, but you still, yeah, but you still need to be able to get off. You still need to be able to be in play off the tee.
You do.
Because a lot of people, and by the way, a lot of people don't play by the rules because they'll hit one off the tee and it'll go out of bounds.
Yeah,
and,
you can't cheat.
And then you'll drop one up there.
No, I'm three off the tee.
I mean, unless there's a red stake there, but you still have to be in play. Yes.
Correct.
Yes, on the 100 yards in, but you have to be in play off the tee.
But if you just say, you know what, I'm not very good with my driver, you could maybe go 5-iron and you're going to have a long ways to go, but
you could
just play for bogeys.
Yeah. Before I started hitting driver when I was probably 23, I didn't start playing until I was about 23, 24. I was hitting 7-iron off the tee.
Why not?
Just because that was the one club that I was comfortable with.
You were doing old man golf before you were old.
Yeah. I was just hitting 7 because I couldn't get the driver in play.
Yeah.
But now I'm silly.
Did another one of those signs say, keep your eye on the ball, JP? But basic.
Work on your short game.
You're trying to jump.
Short game tipper.
You're trying to
drive. Did another one say, drive for show, play for dough?
You guys are hyping up take practice swings. How's any different?
Well, it's one of the
take
most.
Take practice swings.
He's one of the most well-known, most respected instructors in the world.
I watched his
one
stupid
of five or six
project with a bunch of numbers that didn't get better.
Well, a lot of them did. I think Adam Levine plays all the time now.
He is definitely one of the most respected, but no one goes in their front yard and just swings 100 times.
No.
You'd be shocked. Would be shocked.
Actually, Hank retweets a bunch of donks that are doing it.
I'm not saying there's not one person that does it. The majority of golfers don't ever do that.
Of course, the majority don't, but it's what his tip is.
Maybe that's what Steph Curry was doing. Didn't Steph Curry just smash a coffee table at a hotel practicing his swing?
Exactly.
Getting his 100 swings in.
Exactly. He's trying to get.
Isn't he silly?
He's
really good.
He's
really good.
They played
shockingly
in that web.com.
Well, he's a world-class athlete.
I thought he was going to embarrass himself.
Golf?
All right, let me give you the scoop on the radio guy. Do you want to know the guy's name right off the bat? Here's the scam.
Kane?
So apparently this guy who, I mean, God bless him, he's had a long career. And we've met him before, and he's hilarious. He's a fun guy. I think he's crazy.
O'Meara.
Oh, I know who it is. It has to be Sid Rosenberg.
It's Sid Rosenberg.
It's got to be him.
Sid, who's been on the Bernie and Sid show, of course. He was a regular on Imus in the Morning.
He definitely butted in front of me in one of the buffet lines at one of the Super Bowls to get a bagel.
Right.
I didn't say anything because, I mean, he's a whack job.
I remember he was giving us tips on our Super Bowl trips on like how to hang out and how to party.
Well, he's the last person I would take a tip from ever.
Exactly. But we didn't know that at the time.
Right.
We didn't know that at the time. It was like 20 years ago. But apparently his scam was he met some dude that had some book, I think, and he told him he accepted $5,000 because he said he would get him on the Geraldo show, right? So the guy paid him $5,000, and then he kept delaying and delaying and delaying. And what he did was, instead of putting him on the Geraldo show, he put him on his show. He put him on his show 3 times. And then he, like, filled in for, like, Imus or for Boomer and Carton, another one.
Right.
And interviewed him on that show. He was trying to make good on his 5K, but he never got him on the Geraldo show.
Okay.
So
even have a show now?
I guess this is back in the day. I don't know.
Okay.
It's June 14th, 2014.
Maybe he's got a Fox Hour somewhere that we're not aware of.
Apparently, he is a WABC personality on 77 AM. Geraldo is.
Okay.
So he claimed that he knew the producer there, and he was going to get him booked on the show, and he accepted $5,000 for it. Mm. Well, you obviously can't do that. So,
hear that, Drab?
Yeah. It's called Drabby, be honest.
Radio Insider.
What have you ever accepted in your 15-year career? Can you not say that? Is there something you'd be embarrassed?
I haven't accepted anything.
Are you being 100% honest?
Honest.
Besides, like, food.
Food.
You made gift cards.
I don't think anything. I don't know.
Back in the day, it was wild. Back in the day, it used to be wild. But I don't think it's that way
anymore. Why would Drabby be offered anything, to be honest?
Sometimes I am.
Like what? Cash?
Maybe cash.
Have you been offered cash?
You've been offered cash to be on someone's show?
No. To book someone on our show.
Oh, to book someone.
Yeah. Oh. No one wants him.
Yeah.
Who the hell would offer cash to be on this god awful show?
Yeah. To promote.
Somebody that's really desperate.
They don't care about the show.
So someone offered you cash to be on the show?
Yeah, give me 2 minutes. I just told someone like 2 weeks ago that we couldn't do something.
Man, we're exposing the seedy underbelly of radio here.
Oh, and they were willing to pay money.
Yeah, check back with me. Let me find my email.
Do you remember Brett back in the day, some girl wanted to promote something, and she told him that she would hook him. That was his wife?
It was
a good offer.
You sure about that?
I'm pretty sure that's how they first met.
Oh.
It was like an opening line.
I think a little differently of her now.
But that was her offer to get on air and promote something. That she would.
What
go
was
out
she
with
promoting?
I don't know. But I remember
some sort
the story.
Of charity endeavor. Mm. Something like that.
She was promoting her butt.
All right, I don't care. I don't care that much.
All right, I told you I had some scoop on the Jennifer Aniston and Justin Theroux romance. Apparently, Cakes, they can relate to Lurch. They didn't have sex for 12 months before they called it quits.
Wow.
They slept in separate bedrooms on the rare occasions they were under one roof. Remember, she was living out in L.A. He was living a large portion of the time in New York.
Right.
And they said, Justin would always make the excuse about being stressed or tired.
I can relate.
It wasn't Aniston.
It was him.
It was Justin.
You think he was hitting something else?
Yeah, it means he was doing this elsewhere. And was tired.
I don't know.
Stressed.
I don't know.
That's my early read.
It's where the sources come from, though.
I don't know.
I know. I always wonder that.
The source is a snitch.
Snitches usually have good info.
Do you think they're just friends of the couple that will just talk to the rags?
Yeah, talk to somebody? And they get paid. Like, do you know anybody famous that you could snitch on? We should try to get paid.
Yeah,
he's got some famous friends.
I have a few famous friends, but it's like a good that it wouldn't come back to haunt us.
They
would circle
that.
Back.
I don't know about that.
Would you do that? That's a great hypothetical moral question for you. Would you sell one of your celebrity friend's stories if you knew it wouldn't circle back to you? And by the way,
I can't
be the snitch. And not something that would be like a home wrecking situation, but like you had like a story that could
What's the number that would get it done? Like 50K?
Oh, a lot less
If it wasn't going to come back
to me. If it would never come back to you, do it for 5K. You do Sid Rosenberg.
Yeah, just fix my roof. Just fix my roof.
Hey, Eric,
have to think about what the best story is.
Yeah.
Would you tell Sports Illustrated Paul Rabil does steroids for 50K?
Well, no. Well, first of all, that's a good friend of mine. I would never say that. So just like slander him? I would never say that. It's not true. Why would you even say that?
Well, I'm just saying.
You're talking about a good friend of mine. You're making up a slanderous thing. No.
No,
I wouldn't make up something.
He's saying hypothetically, Ricky.
If you're saying hypothetically.
Yeah, hypothetically.
Yeah.
If that was true.
You thought he was saying that thinking it was real?
Yeah. Hypothetically, if that was true. No, I don't think I could do it to a friend, but I could do it to someone who I was like a casual friend of.
Like an acquaintance.
I could backstab someone I didn't care that much about. I couldn't backstab a true friend. Unless it was really lucrative.
I know something.
Unless it was life-changing money.
I know something, and I've already checked.
Mark Roberge lip-syncs his concerts.
Oh, how dare you!
Why are you just making up all these things?
I understand.
People are going to be hearing this secondhand and think they're barely listening, and they're going to think you're saying something.
Well, they're stupid.
You're just being stupid.
We're living in the hypothetical world,
right now. I would never say that about Mark.
Pretty credible source. I have a bag over my head.
It's a great bit. All right, coming up next, we're going to shift gears. We'll talk about the Wizards. They've lost 3 in a row. Have a game at home tonight against the Miami Heat. Chase Hughes covers the Wizards for NBC Sports Washington. Joins us next on The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.